here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll continue to preview the Giants regular season matchups today as we'll take a look at the San Francisco 49ers. Ray Ratto of Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area will join us at the bottom of the hour to give us the layout of the land in San Francisco. This is obviously going to be a rematch from last season as the Giants and the Niners both met at MetLife Stadium. So we will certainly get into that. We'll also open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. If you can't get to the phone, you could also chime in on the conversation via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. We will get to as many tweets as possible throughout the course of the program. It is exactly 1 month from the first preseason game in terms of the Giants getting started for the preparation of the regular season. They will be going up against the Cincinnati Bengals on August 14th. That is a Friday evening. It is July 14th now.
Did you hear that Andy Dalton got booed at the All-Star Celebrity Softball game?
I did not hear that.
Poor guy.
Wow.
Well, I mean,
Bengals fans have big expectations. They want to get past that first round.
Yeah, and let's face it. Look, when you look around the landscape of the NFL, you know, teams that are doing well are teams that have quarterbacks. And the teams that might be, you know, kind of in the running to be above average without a quarterback have top-notch defenses. You need one or the other to really be able to win football games in the NFL. I do like Cincinnati's defense. But I think this is really going to be a make or break year for Andy Dalton. I know they agreed to a new deal for him last year, but I don't have the specifics. But if what I recall, there's some out language in that contract
for
Cincinnati.
Not everything's guaranteed.
So, you know, and I hate to talk about, you know, coaches on the hot seat. I love Marv Lewis. I think he's one of the best guys, let alone best coaches in the NFL. I think it's his say in regard to how long he stays in Cincinnati. But as you know, it's kind of like that quarterback coach unity that dictates a lot of success or failure and all that talk. I really think this is a really crucial year for Cincinnati and Andy Dalton.
I mean, I don't know, big picture, though, how crucial it is for Andy Dalton. Because remember, he's coming off the rookie contract. He's still very young. There's a great deal of upside.
Oh,
not necessarily going to find a replacement so easily, especially in this day and age.
I disagree. I think this is a make-or-break year. I think if Andy Dalton does not have the season that Cincinnati wants him to have, I think they will start looking in another direction for a quarterback.
Well, keep in mind, they've made the playoffs every single year he's been under center, and very few quarterbacks can say that since they've come into the National Football League.
But they've lost because he throws interceptions in big moments.
They have, and also they've been plagued by injuries, too. Let's not forget about that. A.J. Green was banged up. You know, some of the running backs were banged up, the offensive line a little bit inconsistent. I think there were a number of factors why the Bengals didn't necessarily perform quite well. Their defense has been consistent, but even some of their big-time players, Geno Atkins was banged up too last season.
So, guys
that were integral on that roster in and out of the lineup.
I get all that. And there are some really great things about Andy Dalton. But at the end of the day, if your quarterback mentally cannot perform under big-time situations, and let's face it, that's what happens. The goal is to win a Super Bowl. So you go into the postseason, you know, it's another level, it's another environment. You have to be mentally strong. And unless Andy Dalton can kind of turn that corner, are you a team? Are you a city? Are you a fan base that's just happy about making it to the playoffs but never winning that next game to advance? I don't think you are.
I would agree with you, but I also think that given how difficult it is to make the playoffs consistently every single year because of the nature of the league and the parity in the league, I think you're content that you're in the mix every season. And remember, they're playing in a very challenging division. You have the Steelers and the Ravens there.
You could say the AFC North is
one of the deepest divisions, I would say.
So, but I think what's really going to be interesting is the Giants are going to be heading up to Cincinnati, and they're going to spend a few days practicing with the Bengals before that first preseason game. And then, of course, they're back here at home against Jacksonville. I love the fact that they take on the Jets week three because, as we know, week three is the week that the starters play the majority of the time. So we'll get a really, really good taste of what this Giants team is looking like.
It's also the Snoopy Bowl, too. We can't overlook that fact
know,
as well.
I know. You love the trophy.
Love the trophy.
And then, of course, it ends with the New England Patriots, that September 3rd game, which, you know, it's going to be interesting because we're all kind of waiting on pins and needles to see what Roger Goodell is going to decide in regard to Tom Brady. My gut is telling me because Greg Hardy's suspension was reduced from 10 to 4, I don't know how the commissioner could not reduce Tom Brady's suspension from 4 to 2 when you're comparing in regard to what these two players have done. You're comparing apples and oranges. So I'm actually, at first I did not think his suspension would be reduced. I do now think it will be. I think it'll be 2 games. But it's going to be interesting to see then what do they do that September 3rd game with Garoppolo. You know, will he play at all, considering that, let's say, hypothetically speaking, if it is the first 2 weeks for New England, he will be their starting quarterback.
Well, obviously that remains to be seen. They're supposedly going to come up with perhaps a decision on that this week. But keep in mind, Roger Goodell's the arbitrator. In that case, it was Harold Henderson who was the arbitrator in the Greg Hardy case. Could be a difference of opinion. We'll have to see what transpires over the next few days.
Can Brady play in those preseason games?
Yes.
He can, right?
You're allowed to play in the preseason
games.
So,
you know, let's say hypothetically speaking, it continues to be 4 games or 2 games. You know, maybe New England's like, listen, you know, you're going to be out of commission for the next few weeks. Let's just let Brady play the entire 4 quarters in that September 3rd preseason game.
Well, Bill Belichick's known for playing some of his starters, even in that final preseason game, given the Giants essentially play the Patriots, it seems, every single year in that final and fourth game. It would not surprise me if the starters get some looks, but I think they're going to have to really decide and determine where Jimmy Garoppolo is in terms of his progress and whether or not he'd be ready for week one. They perhaps would want to give him some
more. Oh, I don't think they have
work.
Anybody else to go to. I think he will be it.
Who knows if they maybe they bring in a veteran. Remember, Matt Flynn they signed too. Keep that in mind. Let's not forget about that. I would assume Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be a starter, but I mean Matt Flynn is a veteran quarterback who's been around.
Garoppolo, a lot of people might I just found this out a few weeks ago, but apparently Garoppolo won like practice player of the week like 7 times last year. And you know how, you know, Bill Belichick likes his, you know, practice how you play. So I think it's a given that Garoppolo will be the starting quarterback for the Patriots.
I just, when it comes to the Patriots, I don't think anything's a given, considering Belichick keeps everything very close to the vest when it comes to his decision-making. Let's open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Getting us going here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live is Christian in New York. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Anita.
How we doing, Christian?
Got it right this time.
Right on the money.
I'm sorry, what?
I said right on the money, correct.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to talk a little bit about Shane Vereen today. A lot of people seemed a little curious about why they paid him so much. But when you think about throwing a 2-yard pass to a running back, that's practically a run play. And it's also going to be a little better than trying to get a push every single time with the line. So I think that passing to Vereen is basically a second dimension of the run game, and it can probably be a lot more effective against teams like the Bills and Jets.
Well, he's proven that when he's been with New England over the last few years. I would agree with you. I think it is an extension of the running game, and Vereen can also run the football. Let's not forget about that. He's going to get some carries this season. It's not as if he's just going to be an added receiver out of the backfield. The other thing is he's very effective as a slot wide receiver, which New England utilized him time and time again. So there's versatility there with Shane Vereen, and I think that they're going to try to obviously find the perfect ideal match between Rashad Jennings, Andre Williams, and Vereen. I would be very surprised if one running back this season runs away with the majority of the carries. I don't think it's going to be equidistant between the three, but I certainly think they're going to share the workload as much as possible. Each and every guy is going to have a defined role so that this way they complement one each other very nicely.
Yeah, and also if they try to compensate for how much we pass to Vereen, that would open up draw plays right up the middle really nice. So they're going to have to play him honest, and I can't wait to see that second dimension of the run game.
Well, the screen pass and dump-offs has been something that we saw a little bit of last season, Christian, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. They would look to further expand that this season. I think they have the personnel in place. I also think there's a number of wide receivers that play well out of the slot, and they'll hopefully be on the same page with Eli Manning. Remember, the basis of this offense is not just to necessarily go for the home run, which we saw under Kevin Gilbride's offense, but it's also to spread the wealth within a close vicinity so Eli can get rid of the football rather quickly, and I think Vereen should help that cause.
I I guess in regard to ESPN.com, their website, each team has a question in regard to who's the best newcomer in their division. And so for the NFC East, Greg Hardy, Sam Bradford, of course, Greg Hardy, newcomer to the Dallas Cowboys, Sam Bradford, newcomer to the Philadelphia Eagles, DeMarco Murray, I'm sorry, Sam Bradford, newcomer to the Eagles.
Eagles, yeah.
DeMarco Murray as well, newcomer to the Eagles, and Shane Vereen to the Giants. Out of those four guys, who's the best newcomer in this division? I think it makes for a good argument. Feel free to call in 201-939-4513. You take a step back and you kind of look at the talent that has been added. It's pretty interesting, especially to see the dimension. DeMarco Murray in a much different offense. Sam Bradford, assuming that he's going to be the starting quarterback. But in looking at how all these guys are going to help the new teams they're on, I'm really excited to see what Shane Vereen is going to do. You know, I think a lot of people look at Shane Vereen and kind of say, okay, well, this is how he's going to add to the Giants offense. But as you said earlier, we were just talking about the New England Patriots. You never know what you're going to get with Bill Belichick. Some weeks he used Shane Vereen, some weeks he did not. I think really the sky's the limit. I'm really excited to see what Ben McAdoo is going to do with this young man and his talent.
The only difference I would say between how New England used Shane Vereen versus how the Giants are going to use him, you know, as you noted, there were some weeks where Belichick would use Jonas Gray. Ridley, Vereen would disappear. I think he's going to be much more LeGarrette Blount, another one who they brought in late in the season. I think Vereen's going to have more of a consistent role with the Giants. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say you're going to see him 5 carries game one and then all of a sudden he's going to disappear for 3. That tended to happen with New England. The Giants, you know, they're going to utilize him as much as they can week in and week out. But, you know, it's not going to be Rashad Jennings 25 carries and then let's sprinkle in one or two other guys. They want to make sure that they can preserve all three of these running backs throughout the course of the season. Let's head back to the phone lines. Liam is in Old Bridge, New Jersey. Liam, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Well, I have a question. How do you feel with JPP not knowing if he's going to come back, you know, fit on the defensive line? Is Owa, I can't pronounce his first name, is he going to fit in good, fit in well?
Double O.
That's the easiest way to go.
Let's just go. That's how we're flowing with it this season. Just call him Double O. That's all you need to know.
Well, all right.
Okay.
Well, Liam, appreciate the phone call. To answer your question in terms of how Double O, or OOO Digizua, for those of you who want to attempt it, is going to fit in, it's going to be interesting. I don't think that one player in particular, Anita, is going to assume in every down role. I think Steve Spagnuolo is going to do whatever he can to maximize the usage of the depth chart, which we've seen in his first stint here as defensive coordinator, and we've even seen it when he's been an assistant, whether it be in Baltimore and New Orleans and so forth. So, you know, Double O is going to be an option, but to say that he's going to be in for X amount of snaps, he's going to be a third down only defensive lineman, I wouldn't go that far to restrict how they're going to utilize him this season.
No, and really, We really haven't seen what he's going to be able to bring to the Giants equation. It's a very sad situation in regard to what's going on with JPP, but we talked about it yesterday for a brief period of time, and that is, there is so much depth and there's so much talent at this defensive line position that, you know, not to diminish what has transpired, but the fact that there is so much depth and so much talent, I don't think it's going to hit this defense as hard as it would, let's say, for example, if this would have happened to an offensive lineman. So, I think there's so much talent and so much versatility. And I know we've been sitting here talking about all the guys that that are positioned at the defensive line, but I think you touched on it yesterday briefly, and that is Devon Kennard. I think the sky's the limit now in regard to how Spags can get creative and utilize him kind of as a hybrid. I kind of envision like the same way that the Baltimore Ravens kind of use Terrell Suggs, depending on the situation and the down and the scheme, having him play linebacker, having him move up and getting after the quarterback as a pseudo defensive lineman. I'm really excited to see how creative Spags can get with him.
Yeah, he's certainly an X factor on this defense, especially with what he was able to do in limited time last season. You know, the key in terms of getting the most out of the defensive lineman this year, Anita, and, you know, we talked about this briefly yesterday, and, you know, I got some feedback on Twitter in terms of, you know, how much emphasis do you put on sacks and JPP's value. Once again, I can't emphasize enough the consistency that they're going to need out of this defensive line and the linebackers that you just touched on, Anita, to stop the run first. You know, that has to be priority number one this season in terms of the defense's outlook. Because, you know, if you go back to the numbers, you're talking about a defense that was 30th against the run last season, a defense that allowed 4.9 yards per carry, which was dead last in the NFL. You know, the staff, the players, they realize that before we talk about how many sacks they ultimately want to collect, how many sacks the individuals want to collect as a unit, as a group, they need to make sure that they stop the run. And that's what I think the coaching staff is going to look for during the course of training camp and even in the preseason. Which four players, Anita, on the defensive line are the best to put together to stop the run? I mean, I think that's one of the things that they're certainly going to be searching for this offseason.
Yeah, and I don't mean to put you on the hot seat, but, like, just based on what you've seen in OTAs and what you've seen at the minicamp, who would you put on the Spags defensive coordinator hat, Lance, and so who would you roll with in that regard?
Well, JPP is great against the run, but if we're going to go under the hypothetical that we don't know when exactly he's going to return, I guess you can't assume that he's going to be in the four, at least for perhaps the sake of a hypothetical. I would certainly go with Jonathan Hankins. He's certainly a guy that eats up space. I would throw in Kenrick Ellis. That's what he was known for in terms of his days with the Jets. You know, Cullen Jenkins is interesting, perhaps of maybe moving him to defensive end to try to get his versatility out there. Now, DeMontre Moore, the key for him is to show a little bit more consistency in stopping the run. So that's why I'm going to lean towards Robert Ayers as the other defensive end. And then I'm
you
torn.
Really like Selvey.
I do like Selvey. Well, the reason
I'm
like Selvey, Anita, is
I thought Selvey would be in your top four.
What I was going to get back to is it's the other defensive end. I'm torn between Jenkins and Selvey. Which veteran do you feel gives you the most versatility? And I would say they're both very good in that department. Selvey, though, is an underrated run stopper if you look at what he did in Dallas. So if you basically said you have to pick one, I'd probably lean towards Selvey.
And keep in mind, you know, this is Selvey's first year. I think maybe I've interviewed him once. So I don't know how his persona is kind of translating in that locker room. But I'll tell you what, Cullen Jenkins is a leader on that defensive line and in that locker room. So I think for sure Cullen Jenkins, regardless if he plays inside or if he puts him outside, whatever the case, I do believe that Cullen Jenkins will be part of that four just because of the leadership that he brings to that unit.
Well, and he's the incumbent, so clearly, you know, it's his job to lose essentially when you're bringing back the veterans who have established their
and
presence.
And we didn't even mention Wynn.
Correct. Kerry Wynn is another one. I mean, I think Kerry Wynn is a little bit younger in terms of comparing him to George Selvey and Cullen Jenkins, and perhaps him becoming more of a consistent two-way player. We know he can get to the quarterback, Anita. He showcased that and then some. How is he consistently in terms of stopping the run? That is something that we'll get to see this season.
Also, you know, it's what I find interesting is I understand your philosophy in regard to the first thing you need to do in order to be successful in the NFL as a defense is stopping the run. Go to tier two, and that's the linebacking core, and this is something that I've been talking about, that I feel that this is the most talent that I've seen this defense have in regard to that linebacking core. So I'm really excited to see what they can do. Obviously, they help stopping the run. My biggest concern is the secondary, and not necessarily Prince and DRC. My concern with them is staying healthy. They stay healthy. They're two of the best corners. I think you can argue top 10, top 7, top 5 corners in the NFL. My concern is the safety position. So it's an interesting debate to have. Do you want the defensive line for the Giants going into a game thinking stop the run first? But at the same time, do you want them to go in thinking get to the quarterback quickly because your safety position is so suspect? And it's not a knock on Landon Collins, or I think Nat Burhe is going to win that job. He was dealing with a calf injury this offseason. I think those, right now, my gut's saying that those are going to be your two starting safeties. But because Landon Collins is so raw, and you don't know what you get with Nat Burhe, is it more important for a defensive line to give a quarterback no time, especially in a pass-happy NFL, as opposed to a defensive line who's coming in there like, you know, just wanting to stop the run? You know, it's it's an interesting conversation debate to have.
I think it's hard, though, to have the philosophy, and it's certainly a pass-happy league, but more and more quarterbacks, including Eli Manning, based on what we saw last season, are getting rid of the football so quickly that I don't know if the mindset from a defensive perspective can be goal one, we have to get to the quarterback. I think goal one should be stop the run, make sure everybody's on the same page and knows their assignments, and then hopefully as we get more and more comfortable with our defensive scheme, the hits on the quarterback will come and we will eventually get to the quarterback. But if you get so overly aggressive that all you're consumed with is getting to the quarterback, Anita, that's when I think you get into trouble where you start to expose your secondary and you put them in a precarious situation. So a game of balance is going to be the key this season in the early stages. Let's try to squeeze in a few more calls before we have our guest at the bottom of the hour as we'll talk about the San Francisco 49ers and that matchup coming up later this season. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening? Joe, are you there?
Yeah.
How we doing, Joe?
Hey, good morning there, Anita and Lance. There.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I was just looking at the linebackers in the East here, and three key ones I was thinking would be for the Cowboys there would be Sean Lee, for the Eagles would be Kiko Alonso, and for the Giants would be John Beeson. How many games do you think these guys will play? And I think that will help where our defense ranks, I think, them defensive ranks, because I think all them really have are injury-prone. And I think linebackers, the way they are, where they are positioned, that they would be more injury-prone, getting hit from the right, the left, the rear, the back. You just never know. What do you think about that?
Well, as you mentioned, all three of those guys have failed to stay healthy. Kiko Alonso, the Eagles acquired from the Buffalo Bills.
I should have added him to the best newcomer.
Yeah. Well, the Eagles have so many players, and he could have listed the entire roster,
Sam Bradford, DeMarco Murray, and Kiko Alonso.
I mean, you shouldn't even stop there. So Alonso right now I think is a wild card. Sean Lee has been plagued by injuries. And, you know, as you alluded to, Joe, John Beeson's been banged up, even dating back to his days with the Carolina Panthers. But, you know, here's another way to look at things with respect to the linebacker position across the division, Joe. If you look at the Giants, you have Devon Kennard, who certainly could be a very impactful player at that position. The Eagles have a guy named Michael Kendricks, who also has been an up-and-coming newcomer to that division, who I think has looked very good. The Cowboys don't necessarily have a young guy because they're relying on Sean Lee and Rolando McClain. Anthony Hitchens, I don't think, is at the tier of where I would put the Kendricks and the Kennard yet because the limited impact that we've seen. So Philly and the Giants, I would make the argument, you have a younger group that perhaps can fill the void in the event that your veteran does not stay healthy, whereas the Cowboys and the Redskins perhaps don't necessarily have that luxury. You know, that will be interesting to see how things play out. If in the event that one of those three injury-plagued players is beat up again, you know, are the Eagles and the Giants in a better position to make up for that loss as opposed to perhaps the Cowboys and the Redskins? That will be something to at least watch throughout the course of this year.
And also the backfields, the Eagles, you know, they're having big changes in there with their safeties and their corners. The Giants with their safeties, the Cowboys, I believe, are adding a new player or two to their defensive backfield. And the Redskins, well, they did break in some young guys last year, so it's. Really, you know, who's staying healthy and who's going to all come together there, you know, that could mean a lot for the defenses. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, Joe. A lot of new faces across this division, top to bottom. It's not just the Philadelphia Eagles. We've seen the Redskins bring in some new faces. They have a new defensive coordinator. Dallas, obviously, staying intact for the most part, but who knows what's going to happen with their running game with DeMarco Murray moving over. And as we've noted throughout this program, the Giants have made a number of changes. We're going to get back to more of your phone calls throughout the duration of the program, but as we mentioned off the top of the program, we're continuing to preview the Giants' regular season matchups. Yes, it is never too early, and they will be playing the San Francisco 49ers once again this season. And to help break down the San Francisco 49ers, we are now joined by Ray Ratto, who covers the team for Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area. Ray, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, same old nonsense.
Wow, what an offseason it's been for you, Ray.
Oh, come on. You guys don't enjoy pure comedy gold. And the great thing about this offseason is it began last offseason, because that's when we all pretty much knew that the Jim Harbaugh era was going to end. We didn't know it was going to end at 8-8, but it was clear that he and Trent Baalke and Jed York were no longer seeing basically face-to-face, let alone eye-to-eye, on really anything. So we had essentially a six-month run-up to the disaster to unfold. And so their little mini era of near greatness crashed and burned, and now they're starting over again.
Well, I mean, kind of talk about what really went down, or at least what you're aware of in regard to Harbs, because, you know, you heard so many mixed reviews. Did he lose the locker room? Did he not? Kaepernick came out and said that the changes that have been made are positive, that he's excited about this season. Does that have to do with the fact that there's a new coaching regime there in regard to a head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator?
Well, Kaepernick is going to say the changes are positive because he doesn't get to not say they're positive. I think we sort of have to take that one with a grain of salt. But basically what happened, if you want to get to the essentials of it, is Jim Harbaugh wears on people. And I think the 49ers knew that when they got him, but they needed something after a decade of really poor results. So they were willing to roll the dice. The problem is they didn't get the Super Bowl they thought they would get in that time. And did he lose the locker room? Maybe a little bit, but I think all players hate all coaches after a while. I mean, you can't be asked to run into other people at high rates of speed over and over and over again without getting a little tired of the boss. But they played hard throughout their 4 years, with the singular exception of the game in Oakland last year when it was clear they just didn't give a damn. But in all other games, they played hard for him, and they played hard for each other. So I don't think he lost the locker room to the point where it was toxic, but he surely lost the owner and the general manager. First the owner and later the general manager, but ultimately it was both of them. So the day that the season ended, and they had that, and he and Jed York had that very sort of uncomfortable embrace on the field. It just screamed volumes about sort of where it went bad, how it went bad. It was just two people who had just had enough of each other. And Harbaugh being sort of this perpetual competitor who has to fight for everything just because that's how he's wired, that just wore on a guy like Jed York, who had never really had to fight for anything. And so it was just opposites were no longer attracting.
So, Ray, they now turn to Jim Tomsula, who's been on the staff. How does now the culture change in your view? How are the players responding to him?
So far it's fine because, you know, he hasn't really asked them to do anything. The training camp hasn't started yet. They say the right things about him because, you know, when you're the defensive line coach, you're sort of your unit's pal. I mean, because they understand what defensive linemen go through, and they're sort of sympathetic to their needs. So right now, Tomsula's on scholarship. It's going to be, you know, when training camp starts, the first time they have a tough loss. I mean, the test for him is still yet to come. But for now, you know, they accept the fact that, you know, this is the business they've chosen. And the business they've chosen occasionally means that, you know, the king is dead, long live the king. So for right now, there's no issue at all. But the issues come when you start seeing the stress, and the stress hasn't happened yet.
Ray Rotto joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Looking forward to that San Francisco 49ers matchup on October 11th, week 1, 2, 3, 4, week 5. And that's an evening game right here. Ray, what does that mean? We're gonna break some bread, go have a bottle of wine, grab a steak somewhere?
I don't even think we need to wait for the game.
Okay.
There's just no reason. I mean, I think that it's always a good time to drink. In fact, I'm drinking now.
Wow, awesome.
Never too early.
Hopefully it's a mimosa or a Bloody Mary on this Tuesday afternoon. Let's talk about the new weapons that Kaepernick has to work with. I think it's interesting. You've got Charm City, who's now moved over to the Bay Area. And as we know, Anquan Boldin and Torrey Smith were Joe Flacco's receivers. They're now Kaepernick's receivers. And one thing I do like about Torrey Smith, I love his energy. He's going to be able to stretch the field. I think we'll really be able to see how far of a ball Kaepernick can throw. And then you've got the maturity level and the veteran leadership from Anquan Boldin. And your thoughts on really, you know, how they can help Kaepernick be successful this season?
Well, Torrey Smith gives them a second target. They've really never had, you know, two guys that they can really rely on and enjoy, because they never really got everything out of Michael Crabtree that they wanted to get, because they really didn't know what to do with him. They drafted him sort of on a flyer and sort of thought that somehow magic would happen, and it never really did, and he became disillusioned. And so when he left, they were not really surprised, and they were actually sort of, you know, happy that he'd gone, because they really just couldn't, they just couldn't make sense of what he could do and how to use him best. Boldin has been their best receiver since he got there. And so he and Smith will be fine. The real issue is whether they can get Vernon Davis to return to the form that he's had in the past, because he struggled last year, and he struggled for the last couple. And part of it is he wasn't happy with his contract, and then he was hurt. And then they just sort of, they floundered for a way to sort of integrate him with a passing game that really Kaepernick has not yet mastered. So, you know, you really can't survive in the NFL if you're going to try to throw the ball 60% of the time if you don't have an effective tight end. And it may just be that Vernon Davis is worn out, because he's played a lot of years now. He's got he doesn't have a lot of tread left. So they're going to have to figure out what to do with him, how to get him back, or in the alternative, how to make Derek Carrier an effective tight end for them.
Ray, you look at the offensive numbers last season, 30th in the NFL in passing yards per game. You alluded to the fact that they pretty much struggled across the board. I believe Kaepernick, you know, barely even threw a touchdown pass in the fourth quarter. I don't even think he had any, if I'm correct, throughout the course of the season. Now he's got a new offensive coordinator who was his quarterback's coach last season in Jeep Christ. How much do you anticipating the scheme changing from what Greg Roman ran last season, number one, and is the difference in philosophy perhaps exactly what Kaepernick needs, because that's why maybe perhaps he struggled last season?
Well, I don't know that the change in coaches is going to make a lot of difference, because I think this is largely the regime that Kaepernick had last year. His biggest problem continues to be the fact that when he's in the pocket, he's trying to go through his progressions, but when he feels pressure, his first instinct is to get out of the pocket and stop looking for those receivers. And they've tried over the last 2 years to make him a more effective and more efficient pocket guy without taking away, you know, his gifts outside the pocket and his ability to run. And it hasn't really clicked yet. So until it does, I think they're going to continue to struggle. I think that's why Torrey Smith is really important to them, because they know what they're going to get out of Anquan Boldin. But Smith, I think maybe give it, because he's so consistent, the way he runs routes and how reliable he is, that maybe that will help Kaepernick know where he's going to be, expect him to be where he's going to be when he's supposed to be there, and just feel a little more secure in the pocket. Now, a lot of that is also going to have to do with the offensive line, which was not very good at all last year. But some of it, too, is that Kaepernick needs to know where those guys are going to be when he needs to release the ball. And he didn't always get that from Crabtree last year. And again, you know, Vernon Davis was just not very effective or efficient. So I think Smith will help some, but I think for the most part, they're not going to do a radical new set of things. You know, I think they would like him to run in context a little more, which is not to just say, uh-oh, I can't find my first receiver, it's time to get out of here. I think they would like to make him more comfortable in the pocket so that he doesn't have to go outside anymore. They tried to do that for the last 2 years, and they couldn't make it click, but I think they're going to keep trying because, truthfully, I don't think this is an offense where they're going to want him to run 5, 6, or 7 times a game. I just don't. I don't think they like that. And I think even though Greg Roman is no longer there, I still think the same philosophy holds.
Ray, let's talk about the Ray Rotto, by the way, joining myself and Lance Meadow here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's look at that backfield. As we know, Frank Gore, he leaves. He goes to Indianapolis. He's going to be with the Colts. Next man up is Carlos Hyde. What are your expectations for him this season? And then the complimentary addition of Reggie Bush.
I think, depending on how much tread Bush has left in the tires, he can be an effective counterpoint. But I think they're going to use Hyde in many of the same ways that they used Frank Gore. Because Gore is not a guy, I mean, he wasn't overworked. I mean, he used to be a guy who caught a lot of passes. They went away from that to try to extend his career, and it really worked because he was an effective running back all the way to the last game he played there. Hyde's got big shoes to fill, but I don't think they're going to ask him to reinvent the wheel. I think he's viewed as a younger version of Frank Gore, which is to say a guy with a little more burst, a little more ability to get outside and break stuff while still having Gore's essential ability to spot a hole quickly and get through it, because that was really his great gift, is that, you know, low center of gravity, he could spot a hole opening up and just attack it. And I think that's what they've seen from Carlos Hyde. And, you know, with the fact that he's, you know, he's got younger legs, I think they can maybe use him out of the backfield a bit more, as a passing target. But I don't think it's going to be dramatically different. I mean, they've said all along, we're going to run the football, we're going to run the football, we're going to run the football. And that, to me, says they want Carlos Hyde to have the ball in his hands 20 to 25 times a game, and Reggie Bush to have it another 8 to 10. So there, you're over 30 per game, which is high in the modern NFL for that. So I think they're going to use him much as they used Frank Gore, because they want the philosophy to be running the football. And that's been mandated from the day that Tom Sula got the job.
And that has been pretty much a staple of this franchise over the last few seasons, Ray, running the football as well on the defensive side, consistently stopping the running game. And that brings us to what this defense looks like this season. And a big part of the offseason, as you jokingly mentioned off the top, has been not just the coaching changes, but also one player seems to be retiring after another. And they lost two notable linebackers in Chris Borland and Patrick Willis. Borland certainly unexpected, considering he had a promising rookie year. Is too much being made on the loss of those two linebackers, Ray? And the reason why I ask, because if there's any team to me, when you look at their depth chart, that had a plethora of options at the linebacker position specifically, it's San Francisco, with what Michael Wilhoy did last season. Obviously, Alden Smith is now back. Navarro Bowman, hopefully, fully healthy. Do they have enough depth to overcome the losses of those two particular players this year?
Hard to say. I mean, I think they're expecting Bowman to be back at 100%, although who knows if he's going to actually be the Bowman of old. That was a fairly catastrophic injury. I think there are questions about Alden Smith, who didn't have a great year last year. And Michael Wilhoit, you know, is stepping into big shoes himself. It's a solid unit, but I think, you know, a lot of it is going to depend on how they deal with losing Justin Smith up front, because he really made life simpler for a lot of people, and for a whole different set of reasons, the loss of Ray McDonald. It's a whole different front line with Ian Williams, who was hurt much of last year, Tony Gerard Eddy, and Tank Carradine. So it's a different front three, which means the four linebackers are going to have to make adjustments, and a lot of them. And we'll see how good they are at that, because there was a comfort level playing behind Justin Smith, and when Alden Smith was so good at rushing the quarterback 2 years ago. And I think that's where it really starts. There isn't as much turnover in the linebacker, but everything in front of them is different. So they've got to figure out what they're going to do about that in order to determine how well their linebacking is going to be, I think.
Ray, before we let you go, and I appreciate you so much for staying on as long as you have, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the division as a whole. Seattle, with the addition of Jimmy Graham, we know what you get with their defense. Offensively, I think they've gotten better. Arizona, I can't say enough wonderful things about Bruce Arians. Finally, hopefully, Carson Palmer stays healthy the entire year. I think they're going to be a force. St. Louis, I know some big question marks in regard to having a new quarterback now, the deal that they made to send Sam Bradford to Philadelphia. You know, where does San Francisco lie in this division? How do you feel that this division will continue to be one of the most competitive divisions in the NFL? And at the end of the season, who do you feel in this division will make it to the playoffs?
I think they're clearly not as good as Seattle or Arizona. I think they're probably a hair better than St. Louis. But that may turn out to be wrong, too, just because St. Louis is literally packed with unknowns. I mean, they could all hit lightning in a bottle and end up with 10 wins somehow, because this has been a brutal division the last few years. But I would say that the two clear playoff teams would be Seattle and Arizona. I don't think the 49ers, with all the things that they've got to do between coping with a new staff and a new defensive line, trying to figure out what kind of quarterback Colin Kaepernick is, I think they've got questions to answer, and they're going to spend a fair amount of time trying to answer them. And in this division, the more time you spend trying to answer your own questions, the less time you have asking other teams questions of themselves. So I think Arizona and Seattle still look like the class of the outfit, and the 49ers are, I'd say, at least a couple of games off.
Ray, greatly appreciate the time and the insights on the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm sure Anita looks forward to having a drink or two sometime later this season.
Well, if it helps at all, she could mail me a starter kit now.
Ah, there we go. That sounds like a smart game plan.
Ray, thank you so much. Ray, appreciate your time and your insight.
Okay, take care.
You got all right, it. Ray. He's really a great follow on Twitter, by the way. You know, just even if you're not a San Francisco 49ers fan, his insight on the NFL in general is pretty spot on, and also he's pretty comical on Twitter.
And I know he also covers baseball too as well out
yes.
of the Bay Area, so if you want the ins on the Giants and the A's, certainly a good follow. Ray Ratto, kind enough to join us from Comcast SportsNet Bay Area.
Did you watch, by the way, before we start taking calls, did you watch the Home Run Derby last
a
night?
A little. I was in and out.
I had Frazier. That was my lock.
There you go.
Yeah
he
was,
impressed.
That was one of my Anita
local
locks
too,
of the week. Unbelievable, right? And the Home Run Derby has gotten just destroyed in regard to, like, oh, it's boring, I can't watch for too long. I mean, I think, no pun intended, I think they crushed it. I think they knocked it out of the ballpark last night. It was so fun to watch. Yeah, they sped it up. The way that, you know, you had the brackets and the way that they were competing. And, you know, it came down to that last ball in the last few seconds. I thought it was such good television last night.
No, it certainly worked out. You hope that they stick with it. Major League Baseball has a tendency to sometimes experiment a little too much. We'll see.
Hopefully.
We'll see what happens. But I agree. I think that they hit it right on the nose in terms of making it move quicker. That was a big issue. It seemed like it was so dreadful just sitting there for hours upon hours till they eventually ran out of outs. But that was obviously the latest development on the baseball front. We are here focusing on the NFL. We're going to reopen up the phone lines. Appreciate those of you who are holding during the interview. And just to give you the layout of the land the rest of the week, we will preview the Saints tomorrow and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Thursday in terms of getting into more and more of the matchups coming your way this regular season. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets. I know a few are coming in on a variety of topics right now. Let's head back to the lines. Mike is in New Jersey. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me, man. You got a great show.
Appreciate that. Thanks so much for tuning in. What do you have for us?
I was just saying, how do you think, who's going to be the leader, you think, in our wide receiver department? I mean, because Crew's coming off that knee surgery. I got great talent in the wide receiver department. Of course, Vereen, getting him coming out of the backfield. I don't hear a lot of hype anywhere about, you know, Beckham or this or that. Who do you think is going to answer that number two spot? And maybe you put Crews in the slot position. Who do you think is going to probably emerge? You think it'll be Crews again, you know, being the captain or wideouts, or how will that work, you think?
Well, I don't get too caught up, Mike, in terms of labeling wide receivers specifically, and we talked about this even somewhat yesterday, you know, one, two, and three, because most wide receivers in this league, because they move around the corners, they get their fair share of attention. But to answer your question, if there is one wide receiver who I think has a golden opportunity to take advantage of perhaps one-on-one coverage, can take advantage of the attention that Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham will see, as well as the running backs, I'd point to Reuben Randall, Mike. I mean, I think that's where you have to head towards. He's coming off a very productive season last year. He put up career numbers. Part of that was because a lot of the wide receiver core was banged up. But now, assuming everybody's fully healthy, and you can have multiple weeks where you have Cruz, Beckham, and Randall lining up, I think Randall is the one guy that's probably going to get the second or third corner on the opposition, and therefore he has to win those battles, and I think he has a great chance of doing that.
Yeah, I do too. I hope so. And thanks again. I bleed Giants blue, and that's all I had to ask. Thank you guys so much.
You got it. Thanks so much. And I think it's a good question, because there is a lot of depth, Anita, in this receiving core. So, you know, it's easy to talk about what Beckham and what Cruz are going to do. But, you know, it's also, I think, a little bit more interesting to go down the layers of the depth chart and wonder, well, what is a guy like Randall going to do this season? Can he build off of how he finished last season? Will a player like Dwayne Harris carve out a niche for himself as a wide receiver? You know, that's going to be the storylines to watch as we get into the preseason.
I'm probably one of the most optimistic people you'll meet, right? And I expect nothing but big things from Victor Cruz, but it's not a done deal. I mean, we need to sit back and, you know, he's running great routes and he feels good, and he's being very positive, saying that he's going to be ready for camp. And but, you know, I'm interested. I want to see when he lines up, and he's got to go up against those, you know, those linebackers and those strong safeties and that contact off the line, how much separation he's able to create, because really that was the gift. That's what he brought to the program, and how Eli Manning was able to find him so seamlessly, kind of like what we saw with Odell Beckham Jr. So, you know, I'm as optimistic as most, but you have to be a realist as well. And there's still some big question marks about Victor Cruz. If of course he can at least just be 85%, then I think the three, Victor, Odell, and Reuben Randall, I think, and then adding in, I know we touched on a little bit earlier, adding in the receiving aspect that Shane Vereen brings to the program. Wow. Eli Manning has to be so excited about this season.
Well, there's options there for him. The key is, hopefully, they'll all be on the field consistently week in and week out, because there were options last season. Unfortunately, the injury bug got the best of this team. Charlie is in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Yeah.
What's happening, Charlie?
I was just going to say, Anita, I think you drew the short straw again with hosting with Lance.
Good start there. I like how this phone call started. Very nice, Chuckles.
We're
got good material early
spending,
today.
We're spending the entire week together. It's Lance and I. You got
Dottino,
and is John on vacation?
Yes, John is
so
on vacation.
So you've got Schmelk and Dottino. They're both on vacation, so Lance and I are holding down the fort.
Good.
And Chuckles, unfortunately, we had to actually speak to you. So we thank you for taking this show to the next level.
All right. Hey, I would like to say, you know what I'd like to do is I'd like to have you guys analyze the Giants more than the other teams that we're playing. For example, you know, just analyzing where we need to upgrade, how we could upgrade our offensive line, how we, you know, there are some free agents still out there. Spikes is still available as a linebacker to back up Beeson. Offensive line, you have Long out there, but you also have Anthony Collins. Running back, Pierre Thomas is out there. He's a great back. He's definitely better than Allen's Dakwa. You know, why not bring a guy like him in? I'd like to talk more about how we could upgrade our team, how we could make it better, and going into the season.
Well, I think part of the way you improve your team is also the competition that you bring about when it comes to training camp. You know, I mean, we could sit here all day, Charlie, and speculate about every free agent on the block, but it goes back to you bring in a new free agent. He needs time to understand the system. He needs time to interact with his new teammates, and there's no guarantee that that's going to happen immediately. You know, they brought in a number of new faces via free agency. They have players returning who were injured last season, and the goal is for that group to start to come together. So, I mean, that's the reality of the situation right now. A number of the players, by the way, that you also mentioned, are dealing with some injuries. And Jake Long, who Tom Coughlin addressed earlier this season, they had him in for a visit. The Giants have been on the record mentioning that. But he does have a track record of some knee injuries and knee surgeries. So there's no guarantee that he's going to be 100%, even if you were to bring him in. And I'm sure the Giants, like any other organization, are evaluating not just how a player would fit into their scheme, but also the health factor. Because remember, dealing with all the injuries that they've had, Charlie, over the last few years, what is the benefit of bringing in a player that has question marks on the injury front himself? I don't think that necessarily helps your team immediately.
Well, Anthony Collins doesn't have injuries. They could probably bring him in. I think he's probably a lot better than Newhouse, and he's rated a lot better than Newhouse.
Let me ask you this, Charlie.
Bring some of these guys in. Like you were talking about the wide receivers in either in Lance, and you're talking about, you know, how much depth we have. But if you take Odell Beckham out of the equation and say he has some hamstring issues, who's your number one receiver?
I think Victor Cruz, again, we don't know. This is what I'm saying. We don't know. I'm really excited to see these guys get into pads and what Victor can do with contact. He might surprise us all. This is something we've been talking about. There is no history here of a wide receiver in the NFL coming back from a patella tear. Could be a much easier, faster process than an ACL. We just don't know. So, I'm being optimistic about it, and I'm being excited about it, and I'm being hopeful that it's seamless. We don't know.
Yeah, I hope it is too. But I'm just saying, we have a strong wide receiving core. But you take one guy out, Odell Beckham, and all of a sudden we don't have a number one receiver. I mean, there isn't one there, unless you think Randall is going to all of a sudden step up, which I don't. I think he's probably a good two or three, but I'm just saying, I'd like to see you guys just talk about the depth we have on this team, where we have holes, what we need to get better, and just, you know, go from there. And, you know, positive too on guys that are really strong, but also on some question marks. I think I'd rather have us analyze our team, because it really doesn't matter what the other teams are doing. If we're not doing anything, and JR, for one, is not extending Eli's contract, which I don't understand, then, you know, it doesn't matter what the other teams are doing. You know, we need to get better. We need to, you know, that's all I'm saying. So,
well,
hey,
Charlie, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I mean, I think that we have done a great deal of the discussion in which we focused on the depth chart throughout the entirety of the offseason. You know, the whole point of previewing some of the upcoming matchups is just to start to look ahead at some of the teams and the players, because, you know, there's a lot of teams that made just as many changes as the Giants do, and that's only part of the conversation that we're having each and every day. We're going to get to as many phone calls, as many tweets on Giants-related subject matter, and we have talked about some of the issues. If you look back at the numbers last season, you know,
all those shows are still on Giants.com.
Yeah, the archives, absolutely. Yeah, There's a whole page dedicated to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Yeah, go to the archives. I mean, and I will say this, like, you know, I'm kind of excited that we're doing this right now, because I think it's important for Giants fans to have an idea of who the opponents are going to be and what their storylines are going into the regular season. You know, it's great information. I think it's cool that we're doing this.
And here's the other thing. You know, when you talk about, you know, where the Giants are with respect to depth, the outlook and so forth, you know, I understand speculation is a big part of sports talk. I get that. But, you know, keep in mind, we have not seen these players with pads on throughout the course of the offseason. You know, they haven't necessarily shown the heart and soul of the defense because, you know, everybody's getting a feel for one another. The true evaluation process is going to come, at least from people who cover the team and view the team on a daily basis, once training camp starts, where there's a little bit more physical activity, you're going to see more defined roles, and you're going to see actual pads on and players mimicking what they're going to do during the regular season. So, you know, to look at somebody for what they are doing individually on the side, you can only take so much away, and that's not necessarily adding to the conversation or the outlook of the team. And I think that you have to at least put that in perspective when you look at where the Giants are right now versus where the conversation is going to be 3 to 4 weeks from now, when you actually at least have real examples that you could point to. Okay, this is how this guy looks good running routes, this is how this guy looks communicating with you Eli Manning. The offensive line, very physical on the right side. It looks like they're going to open things up in the running game. Well, you can better make those type of statements once we actually see the physical activity. And we have yet to see that. So there's only so many takeaways that I think you could throw out there right now. Let's continue to take a few phone calls as we take you up to the top of the hour. Kenny is in New York. Kenny, what's happening?
Hey, good.
How we doing, Kenny?
Doing good.
What do you have for us?
This is a question for both of you. I mean, I don't know if it's Tom Coughlin's last year or not. If he does get a contract extension next year, is that a possibility, or are we going to look at someplace else? Are we going to look at a younger coach in the NFL, or is Ben McAdoo going to move up to the head coaching spot?
I honestly feel that it's Tom Coughlin's call here. That's my take. You know, and I know each and every year the conversation and when the Giants struggle, you know, a number of TV shows and analysts kind of talk about coaches on the hot seat and whatnot. I will tell you that in my tenure here in covering this team, the guys in the locker room love Tom Coughlin. He's like a father to them, not just a coach. And I think it's really hard when you look around the landscape of the NFL, Lance, I think it's really hard to find that combination. That you have a head coach who's very good, extremely professional. Players respect him. They look at him like a father. They want to play hard for him. So I think it's Tom Coughlin's call. I think when Tom's done and he says he's done, then that's when he's going to be walking away. It's my opinion.
All right. Then do you see, like, are you going to work within the system, within the organization, or are going to move, or are going to look outside, like get somebody else, or move like Ben McAdoo up to head coach?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very difficult to tell, you know, where they may go in the event down the line. You know, things are changed. I think McAdoo has shown a great deal of promise with what he's brought to the offense. This is going to be year two. You know, the Giants hope to see continual improvement from not just the individuals, but the scheme as a whole. Everybody seems to be more and more comfortable. He's got a good track record based on what he did with the Green Bay Packers. And I think there's a number of attractive candidates that they brought in that are on the staff. But, I mean, who knows what the philosophy of the organization is down the road in the post-Coughlin era. I think the goal right now, at least in the short term, Kenny, is to get back to the playoffs, get back to winning football, keep everybody healthy, and then down the road, when they want to evaluate what they want to do, they'll have some internal candidates, I'm sure, and they'll also look outside the organization.
All right. I have one more question. Sure. This is for Anita. I like how you're so passionate about sports. You know, I know girls do like sports, but it's hard to find girls out there that like sports and all that. When do you see, I feel like hopefully one day, do you see like an NFL coach as a female coach on an NFL team? In the time future.
You know what? I don't. And the big reason why is there's no farming system. And there's no, you know, I played women's tackle football, professional football for 5 years. When I tell people that, they're shocked. Why? Well, the NFL doesn't support women's tackle football. There's no TV deal in place. And so there's really no farming system that allows a female to be a player, then come a coach, and then possibly be an assistant coach in an NFL team. And like we've seen Becky Hammon do with the Spurs. I'm sure you're very well aware of what's going on there. She's coaching the Spurs in Las Vegas for their summer league, which is tremendous. But a big reason for that is because Becky played college basketball, then she played WNBA, and then kind of gained her recognition there and her respect, and then came on board, and Pop adores her, trusts her, the players trust her, the players respect her, and now she's been given this opportunity. So because that system isn't in place for women, unfortunately, I don't see it happening. It'd be great. I think it would be awesome. But unfortunately, I don't see it happening because there's no system in place.
All right, and what about at least refs, or is that the same thing as well?
Well,
female refs.
Well, we are.
We got a female.
Yeah, we just got a female. We got one this year, and it's really going to be interesting because, as we know, you know, at least once a year, if not more, there's one ref that makes a really bad call and is called out and is just destroyed on social media. It's going to be really interesting how she responds, how she handles it, because she's not perfect. I'm sure she's going to mess up on some calls, and hopefully it'll just be, kind of treated like the average male ref that just makes a mistake, and not where, oh, she's a female, she shouldn't be a ref, she doesn't know what she's doing. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all funnels out and how she handles it. But yeah, this year, first time, so it's going to be interesting.
Kenny, appreciate the phone call. Yes. Thanks so much for weighing in. And the good news about her is that she has a great deal of experience officiating at the collegiate level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was that area for her to get used to that profession and now hopefully translate that to the NFL. And we've seen some female executives, too, in the league. As far as coaching goes, I would agree with you, Anita. I think it would be good for somebody to get an opportunity at the college level and then maybe perhaps open the door for something to break through here in the NFL.
You know, there's not even a system in place where girls can play tackle football in college. You know, I mean, that's how there's just nothing. And it's really bizarre to me. It's unbelievable. But and you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of women playing professional football, like the DC Divas, and Indiana has a phenomenal team. Detroit has a phenomenal team. Pittsburgh has Dallas. I want to say they're the Dallas Diamonds. There's some really, really great female athletes that are playing really good football. I was watching ESPN the other day, and there was a cornhole tournament. And let me tell you something. I'm going to brag here. I rock at cornhole. Like, you cannot beat me in cornhole. I am like, so I'm watching this because I'm like, wait a minute. I want to audition for this. I want to try to make this team so I can compete in cornhole. Like, I love cornhole, but it's being televised on ESPN. And I'm saying to myself, are you kidding? A cornhole tournament is being televised on ESPN and women's tackle football is not? What is wrong with this picture? It's so bad. It's just...
Well, the cornhole
bad.
Competition must have some good endorsements or good advertising deals. I'll tell you that. That's probably a big reason why.
Do you play?
No, I can't say I do.
You don't?
No.
Do you play beer pong?
A little. I mean, not
Are
necessarily religiously. I'm not bad. I mean, I got a good follow through, if that's what we're asking.
Do you play flip cup?
No, I do not play that. Not really.
Do you play ladder golf?
No, I mean, what are you, in college still?
No,
the way you're talking. I mean, you know, boy, oh boy. I mean, on a Friday night, what are you, hitting the dorms?
No, but I mean, you know, you go to the beach, you hang out, somebody's house, all these games are going on.
Well, I mean, I recall this happening in college. I don't remember it happening
bit
removed from college.
What do you mean?
I like the youthful energy.
Right?
Don't get me wrong, Anita.
You go to the beach. You walk around the beach. Everybody pulls out their, like, homemade cornhole wood things.
I don't know what beaches you're going to, but
okay.
I can tell you, in my neck of the woods, that's not the beach scene.
Sorry.
Let's try to close
bocce
up shop
ball?
Here on the phone.
You play
that I've seen.
Okay.
That I can understand.
Okay,
that happens, you know, as far as beer pong and everything.
I have a friend who owns a house down on the shore, and they built a bocce ball court in their backyard. So when I go there, that's where I spend the majority of my time.
Okay. Well, that's a private home, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, you know, if you're going out in the public here, it's not like you're walking into a whole setup. It's a distinct difference there.
Okay.
All right. Let's head back to the lines. Chris is in Florida. Chris, what's happening? Chris, are you there? Chris, we hear noise in the background. We're going to give you one more shot. Chris going once. Chris going twice. Chris, so long. Unfortunately, we cannot get Chris. He is saying very few words this afternoon. Let's close up shop here on Twitter. I know a couple of people weighing in. Joe Henderson at Jendy_Hendy. Were Jennings to get injured again, how would you expect McAdoo to delegate carries between Williams and Vereen? Rashawn Jennings played 11 games last season. It's a good question. And Williams was pretty much the major option. We saw a few carries in the backfield outside of Williams, but Williams became like a 20-carry back. If Jennings does go down, I could see Williams getting in the vicinity in need, I would say, 15 carries. I think that that's somewhat reachable for him. And Vereen perhaps in that 7 to 10 area. In terms of the breakdown?
Absolutely, but in regard to like what down, who do you start your series with? That would be intriguing to me because I think a number of people would say, well, you start with Shane Vereen and then, you know, third down you bring in, but Shane Vereen is probably, and I'd say put him on the same level in regard to Rashad Jennings in pass protect. you know, on third down, Eli Manning's going to want the best back there that's going to help with pass protection, especially if it's third and five, third and six. So, you know, that would be intriguing to me. I think each game would dictate in regard to what their game plan is, how many third and long situations do they have. I think if it's third and long, I think Shane Vereen would be back there more so than Williams.
Well, Shane Vereen is known for his pass protection.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point.
He's good.
Something that they can look to take advantage. Andre Williams, remember, last year he was utilized for the first time in a long time because they barely threw him the football in college where, you know, they tried to branch him out as a receiver. And I think it's important for, speaking of areas of improvement, not just as a team but individuals, for him to continue to grow as a receiver, Anita. And the reason I say that, even though you have a nice backfield where you have versatility, you don't want to become predictable where defenses say, okay, well, every time Andre Williams is in the game, we know they're going to run the football.
Right.
I think if Andre Williams continues to improve as a wide receiver, then defenses need to say to themselves, well, hey, the Giants like to use the running backs as receivers. Just because Williams is in the game doesn't mean they're just going to run. They may dump it off to him. So, you know, that's something where I think as long as all three can do similar things, then you really start to keep the defense on its toes.
Yeah. Yeah, but hopefully that won't be a situation that will
correct,
occur.
Correct, yes. Hopefully Rashad Jennings will stay fully healthy and they'll have all three backs for 16 games as opposed to having to mix and match everybody. Because the years that the Giants have had three running backs, I keep going back to that 2008 season, look at those numbers. And that's when the Giants game, especially on the ground, was really setting new records and new heights. And that's what the Giants would certainly like to get back to. So that was do it for Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. New Orleans Saints will be the focus tomorrow. We'll also continue to take your calls on Giants-related topics in Tampa Bay on Thursday. No show on Friday, then we will continue come Monday. So that at least is the game plan for the rest of the week. We appreciate everybody for tuning in and listening throughout the program here on Tuesday. Anita and I will speak to you on Wednesday.
Who wins AL, NL? Who wins today?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with the National League winning this game.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to go with.
All right.
I think Greinke's going to set the tone nicely.
I was just going to say, Zach Greinke. I do want to end on a positive note. And that is, and I know this is a football show, but in regard to what's going on tonight and the fact that Zach Greinke is starting, sports fans out there might not know this, but Zach Greinke suffers from mental illness and depression and had to take a stint away from Major League Baseball to kind of get his life back on track to come back. Of course, that's when he was with, I want to say Kansas City, right?
He was with the Royals before. Yeah.
So, you know, his start tonight, this season, how well he's been able to perform, to me speaks volumes for people out there who are suffering from mental illness, knowing and believing that you can get it under control and in coming back even bigger and better than before. So I can't say enough wonderful things about Zach Greinke, and I think he's an inspiration for a number of people who are suffering from mental illness. So I just want to throw that out there. I'm really excited for his start tonight, and I'm with you. I think the National League wins.
Oh, he's been the best pitcher in ERA in the major leagues in the first half of the season, so hopefully he will showcase that tonight for the National League, at least for those of you who may be Mets fans or rooting for any other National League team. I'm sure the AL will provide a difficult task, but
yeah, hopefully we'll see a little Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. Represent the home team. So we'll break down the All-Star game tomorrow as well in between the Saints and your Giants phone calls. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Jackson on the field. He's got through.